Artorama Podcast.
Hi, Joseph. Thank you very much for your time in doing this Artorama podcast.
Thank you for inviting me and allowing me to speak.
So let's start off. So you mentioned that the first time you asked for a prize during FIAC, right? That you bought a written painting and then you put the painting in the living room, and then everything after that just work really organically. Now, could you tell me a little bit about this beginning?
Yeah, the first time I bought an artwork was kind of an accident because it was not planned. I was visiting FIAC for the third time, I guess. I had the courage to ask for the price of an artwork for the first time of my life, and then realized that I could afford it. I was pretty sure contemporary art was aimed at other people than me, but visiting an art fair, going to ask the price of an artwork I had in mind was really like the beginning of everything. After that non-planned owing, I began a quest without even noticing it, because I looked for the second one, and then for the third one, and then for the fourth one. And after a while, it didn't stop, and I am still continuing. So I guess we are here today.
In your work, do you think it influences you? Because you work in advertising. I'm not sure if it influences your inclination to collect or your view in art or...
I think my work in advertising might have a subconscious influence on the way I collect, mainly on the looking at, you know. It's more conceptual, it's more about stories. And at the beginning, it was also about the format, because the first artwork I bought was kind of a billboard format, you know, the kind of thing I do in my job. And but I'm not looking for advertising avatars, you know, in contemporary art. Sometimes people offer me like really neat and precise photographs, and I do not collect these kind of photos because I mainly like produce them as to work. So I don't have that much photograph in my collection, and these photographs are mainly caption of performances most of the time, and impossible to reproduce if you would like to reproduce them. So they are kind of a catch of a moment. But I must admit that for the themes and the kind of work I look at, I think I'm looking at the same quest in contemporary art than in advertising. And but what I value the most about contemporary art, and it's a huge difference with advertising, because in advertising, we have a given subject, you know, a given brand, a given problem. We have like constraints, limited time or limited medium. And we always have to think very well about the audience, who we are targeting. What I love about contemporary artists is that they chose their subject alone. They have no limit in the medium. They might have like a budget limit, but in the choose of the medium and the format, they have no limit. And they are never as good as when they forget totally about the audience. I value that a lot when contemporary artists give the feeling that they don't give a shit about the audience, you know? And they throw their stuff out of your face. And this is the most important part. You can really quickly identify the artist who take care about the audience and the reception of their work, and it's usually not the best one. So you have, and that's really something I do love about contemporary artists, this total freedom about choose of the subject, medium, and don't give a shit about the audience.
To talk a little bit about medium, let's focus on medium, because you have works that play with painting, for example, but you don't have paintings in the collection. Which kind of mediums do you have?
It's really hard to answer that question. People mainly ask me, what do you collect, like paintings or photographs? And they always need to have a frame. I spend my days telling my clients, think out of the box. So I suppose I didn't want to find a new box and to think inside this box. So that's why I don't have a, like a privileged theme or even a privileged medium. And paintings, I have the feeling that paintings requires kind of art education. And I must confess, I have no art education, not at all. I don't come from a collector family, and I didn't go through that. So I really connect to artwork that connect to me directly, and that I can understand, evaluate, and really confront myself to spontaneously. If you show me paintings, I can tell if it's a good or a bad painting. I can feel things. So regarding paintings, I prefer like the old masters, and I'm always glad to visit exhibition about old masters and even young painters, but I don't collect them. I'm really out of this, and I have a few paintings like dealing or like making fun of paintings. And same thing with photographs, as I told you, I have really a few photographs because it's really, again, defined medium. And I really like to explore new ways of collecting and to push myself outside of my comfort zone, you know. And my comfort zone will be a frame hang on the wall. And I love to go outside of that, so find new ways and new medium. And I love that. That's out good. Of the frame. And out of the wall.
Yeah, that's really cool. And let's go back to this idea that you mentioned before about the story behind the collection. There is always a story behind these works. Can you tell me a little bit more about these stories that are behind?
Yes, of course. When I discover an artwork, I usually don't quickly buy it. I'm a really slow buyer. And at some point, I think galleries hate it. It can take me like months or years to buy an artwork. And I need to process it a long time. And a good clue for me that tells me if I need to buy an artwork or not is if I talk about this artwork a lot after discovering it, an artwork or an artist. So sometimes I bring it into a conversation, and after the 10th or 20th time I bring it to a conversation, I say, okay, now I have to do something about it because it's here. So I do value a lot these small stories I can tell to people and see how they react. So people are not confronted to the actual artwork, but to the story behind the artwork. And I'm always looking at these stories behind the artworks. And I love to confront people to what is lying under what is visible. And I really like that. So there is always a story. And that's also why I did this. I accept the proposal of curator slash artist slash critic Aurélien Moll for my first catalogue to present blurred photographs of my artworks, because I do prefer that people go to read the story than only look at the photograph, because most of them are not about the aspects or the shiny parts or even the size of it, you know?
Two questions popped up in my mind. First is this idea of thinking come outside of the box and with the idea of looking at the work and realizing that this could be seen as through a different set of eyes, as being a common element, a common object in the world, no? So this question of, is this art or is it's not art, just raises, you know, in my mind. And I think you mentioned that in our previous conversations, this blurred boundaries. And then I would love to go back to this idea of the collection, but can you tell me first a little bit about the...
There is a feeling I really love, even if it's a disturbing feeling. It's when I visit a huge exhibition like a Biennale or a fair where you see a lot of artworks, is as soon as you go out the exhibition place, the way you look at the world around you is totally different. So the way you look at a street, at a car, at a shadow on the street, at a tree, is totally different. So I love this influence that the artworks have on me. And you can see like beauty or meanings or new things in like the most mundane elements or aspects of the outside world. So it's really interesting because since Marcel Duchamp, an artwork can be in a gesture or in any object or in any feeling. It's it invites you to be always aware of these things that you usually don't look at, and that's something I am looking for. Contemporary art is going to look at things I usually don't look at the first place. And what is funny is always like to have these artworks that blur the lines between the common mundane world that we no longer look at, we no longer give attention to, and the art world, which is like a really valued aspect of our lives. So at one point, I had the visit of a curator from my first show at my place, and she came to see all the artworks on the walls and to maybe make a choice about the artworks, and she saw in a corner a Burger King cup, and she asked me, "Wow, this is fantastic, who made this one?" And I had to admit that it was Burger King, because it was really like a real Burger King cup.
For sure. And then we bring us back to this this idea of the blurred photographs of people that want to show off, for example, the sizes of the works, etc. And you chose a completely different approach by blurring the photographs of the catalog of the exhibition of your collection. And I was wondering, what did you learn from it? Because you mentioned about the of being almost a therapeutical like process, you know, to just stand there and see the work that you bought through these years. So how was it?
There are two aspects here. The first time I really impressive. Because when you collect, you take one piece, then another one, and without, because I didn't begin my collection by thinking I am starting a collection. I just bought an artwork and then another one. And after a while, I realized, because other people told me too, that I was a collector, you know, and that I was collecting. And at one point when I had no room on the wall and outside of the wall, I understood that. Maybe it was pathological and pathological aspects, because if you still continue to bury things that you can't even have in your room, that means you are a collector, I guess. But the first time I was in the middle of all the artworks I bought, and we showed them as a timeline, the exact order I bought them. So it was really impressive to discover that during some years I was really active. Some other year I bought like barely nothing. How I bought my first ensembles, how the medium were evolving, how I began with young artists, sometimes mixing with more established artists and then going back to a younger generation. So it's really like the story of my life that was on the wall. And at some point I understood what I was looking for, what like I had this two or three themes or obsession I had that were reflecting in my collection. So I guess it's maybe a little bit more expensive than the therapy, but I think at least as effective as a good therapy. I don't advise that to everyone, but at least it's working for me. And it's enough. And in the end, we still have sometimes really nice artwork. So not only the smile of your therapist. And regarding the blurred photographs, I accepted this idea. It was not easy at the beginning, because I looked at a few catalogs of private collections, and all private collections, they try to show that they are the best and they have the biggest and they are the smartest. And when Aurélien Moll proposed me to have blurred photographs of the artworks, at first I was not happy about the idea, but in the end I came to the conclusion that it was really a good statement, because this catalog had to be the souvenir of an exhibition, and the souvenir of the exhibition or the artwork is never the artwork itself. The photograph of an artwork is never the artwork itself. And I mentioned this fantastic work by Sophie Kahn, where she went to a museum where artworks were stolen, and she interviewed every people who were in contact with the artworks, from the curator, people in the room, people at the entrance of the museum, everyone. And she asked them to describe the artwork which was stolen, and none of the description were concordant, and none match the actual artwork. Some people saw a red sweater or the blue sweater, and in the end it was green. So you project things on the artwork that are usually not exactly the reproduction of it. So I really like the idea to go out of the frame, accept to be blurred, and stick to the story more than to photograph of the artwork.
That's really nice. And since we got to this idea of the stolen and not seeing, you know, the hidden artwork, we could maybe address this idea of invisibility. I don't know how it relates to your collection. Is there a way that you see, maybe not as a concept of the collection, but something that you mentioned to me, for example, about the difficulty of collecting video and performance at the beginning, how it was for you?
Invisibility relates on now the most part of my collection that I don't see because it's stored somewhere. But first is, that's the first thing you have to deal with. And since you don't see the artwork, you forget the artwork. So sometimes you just don't know where it is. And you don't even remember you own it. But no, it's a really interesting question because yeah, I began with like really conventional, if I may say, medium and supports. As I evolved in the art world and discovered new works and new practice and followed some artists, I went to more and more demanding supports and artworks. And you realize that the effort you have to do as a collector is not only buying and taking care of the artworks, it's also to push your limits in terms of acceptance of what you can look at and what you are willing to live with. So I really like, it took me like 6 years to buy my first video because I was wondering, like everyone, what do you collect when you own a video? What do you have? Like a USB key with .move file that anyone can have on his computer. And yes, it is, but what you collect is mainly the certificate, and you are the owner of the artwork and not the owner of a video file. So that's not the limit of it. And if you want to share it with anyone, you are free to do it as long as it's not exhibited and shown in bad condition. So you have to accept that. So the more you progress in your collection, I guess, the more you go to demanding and hard supports. So, and the less it's, I guess, visible and coming into this frame we are talking about. So invisibility is not a reaching point for me, but I really enjoy artworks who like get rid of the superficial and the extra and the shiny and the colors and who go like straight to the point in the minimalist way. Another aspect interesting, the more you collect, the less room you have. So it's also, I guess, a tendency you might have to go to this kind of work. So I collect more and more like videos, sound pieces, and things that I can easily store.
And talking about the specific works, since you mentioned video, there is the video of Lingua Ignota of the small mirrors moving. If you could share a little bit about this video and other works that deals with invisibility.
So this work is a work by Edith De Kint. I discovered it in Vils Museum in Brussels, where she had a huge solo show right after Consortium in Dijon. And she had a lot of videos from different time of her career. And this one was shown in a huge wall and place, and I was totally hypnotized by this video. It's really simple at the first sight. It's a small mirror hanging on a wall, and it's slightly moving. And sometimes when it moves, you discover that there is an open window on the opposite side reflecting in the mirror. And you can't know if it's the small air coming from the window, which makes the mirror move, or if it's the movement of the art. Artist who might play as a small magician of this one. And what is great is that it's barely invisible, impossible to see the movement. a stupid object on a stupid wall, and still, after a few minutes watching it, you always have the feeling that you might see yourself reflecting in the mirror. But guess what? It never happens. But you are still hoping. And the artwork here is named about this language told to this religious, coming directly from God. So there is something spiritual, spirit coming out of nowhere to make this small mirror move. So I love this conjunction of interpretation and stories that you can have in this small gesture. Yeah, and after this work of Edith De Quinta, about other videos from her, always on the same, kind of the same aspect, yeah.
And are there other works that maybe we can address, taking the opportunity that we are here talking about invisibility?
I really love, even if I never had the opportunity to show it at my place, but I bought it in Artorama. It was the whole booth of Lambda 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 Gallery, showing Anne Lippard. What is fantastic is that Anne Lippard is an amazing performer, and she sometimes makes these sound pieces. And here it's totally dark room with only three lights on the ceiling, red, a green, and the yellow one, if I remember well. And when you enter the room, voice of Anne Lippard is everywhere around you in the dark. And she repeats a few politeness sentences we always use at the end of emails, you know. And she drives the meaning of this sentence we don't give attention to anymore, and really quickly becomes incredibly funny and revealing this kind of stupidity behind these sentences. So I really love that, you know, it's totally invisible. You can't see the artist, but she's everywhere in this dark room. And the first time, and the last time also, and the only time I bought an entire booth in an art fair. It was only possible at Artorama, but I did it, you know. So I can tell I bought the booth at an art fair. So I enjoyed it. David Horvitz, really small artwork. I really love because it's... it only cost $1. You pay it on PayPal, you know, and you wait for it. You only leave your email address. And at one point, one day, you receive a first email from the artist with so it's an empty email, but you only have the object telling, "I'm starting thinking about you." And exactly 1 minute later, you receive another email with as an object, "I stopped thinking about you." So you can buy like 1 minute of the life of the artist for $1. This minute is yours because always 1 minute is in his lifetime. And I remember I was telling this story to another collector and he told me, "What proves you that it doesn't send like other images to other people?" I said, "Nothing proves it to me. You know, it's only about beliefs and it's like religion or whatever you want. And even if he does, doesn't matter, you know." So it's kind of a visible and invisible artwork because what you own is really like this minute of the life of the artist. And it only like exists in these two emails you have in your mailbox.
It's certainly beautiful. It's perfect. I mean, to end this conversation like this, thank you very much, Joseph. Thank you very much for the conversation, for letting us see a little bit of your collection, making your collection visible to us. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much.
Artorama Podcast.